Welcome to Hedge Fund Tips with Tom Hayes. I'm Tom Hayes, and this is your 201st video cast, 191st podcast for the week ending August 24th, 2023. We're live from the beach in North Carolina. We rented a house where Caitlin used to come growing up. We've done that for many years to kind of share the same experience with our girls, and they're having a great time. So we'll do a quick catch up on that and then get right down to it. Last week, we had the longest podcast in our history. This week, I'm hoping it'll be the shortest. No promises, but we'll take it as it comes. That's me with the girls on the beach. They're doing a little bodyboarding, I guess. That's in Wilmington, actually, on one of the naval ships. That's again at the beach. And that's them dissecting squid at a camp. So that's interesting. They decorated some shells. That's dinner, Mimi having her two dozen oysters as usual, surfing at surf school, which is pretty exciting to see, and Annabelle as well surfing, and then of course jet skis. That's one with me driving, that's one with Mimi driving once we got out past the instructor, and they couldn't give us a hard time and she was ripping away. And then I got to play Eagle Point in Wilmington, which is amazing. Thanks to Gene Mulak for getting me on. That was incredible. We literally got around in 2 hours and 15 minutes. It was unreal. I was like, I had the course all to myself, which is for such an amazing course is unusual. It was a Monday, so we kind of lucked out on that front, and I had a great caddy. So that was fun. And then couldn't help myself. That was a commercial at one of the restaurants we went to, advertising 0.9% financing for a GMC Silverado. So the thesis is playing out there as it relates to Cooper Standard and moving along. So John Templeton, to buy when others are despondently selling and sell when others are euphorically buying takes the greatest courage, but provides the greatest profit. What he doesn't say about that is sticking with it after you buy during the despondent selling for the aftershocks, for the volatility, until you can finally get to the other side to the euphoric buying, and that's where all the money is made. So we're going to talk a lot about that this week. Trend cycle roadmap. This is from Slumer over at RBC, and he's talking about equities being oversold and the pullback in rates. So I think we're seeing the beginning of what we talked about, which is going to be a bid in the long end of the curve. It looks like we're topping out. We're going to find out tomorrow. Maybe we'll get a head fake tomorrow, but I think tomorrow should be the catalyst to start to get a bid in the long end of the curve. And that would be very constructive all around. That helps all of our positioning. The S&P is starting to bounce after the 5% pullback that we were calling for, the 3 to 5% pullback. It hit 5. So all the conditions are falling in place. Now we see what happens at Jackson Hole tomorrow. Tonight, I'll be on, not tonight, at 3:45, I'll be on Bloomberg HT. So you can find that on the website, hedgefundtips.com. I'm not going to be able to cut it into this week's video cast. And then next week, I'll be on Yahoo Finance on Wednesday, and I believe Fox News on Thursday. That's still pending. That's going to be live in the studio in the evening. That'll be my second time on Fox News, which would be pretty exciting. Couple news articles to get caught up on. Generac is a growth stock at a value price. Buy it before the storm start. That's from Nicholas Jasinski. That was originally written about let's just get down by Jacob Sonnenschein, so you can look at the original article. So that's, you know, bottoming. We'll get to that in the article of the week. He goes through, you know, they tend to take off after you get the hurricanes and the storms because people realize they don't have any backup power, and when they sit in their house for 2 days and can't get internet and all their food goes bad, surely enough they wind up buying a Generac backup generator. They realize the solar panels aren't enough. Moving on, PayPal stock could be near its ultimate bottom, analyst says, and he makes a good case. This is the Truist Securities analyst, Andrew Jeffries, talks about there's little or no tech differentiation among e-commerce providers, and intensifying competition is creating problems for even the biggest, best digital tech stacks. He says, we submit, this is a realization at which PayPal arrived earlier than others and has been focused on investing against. We think PayPal can focus on better e-commerce monetization, can add omni-channel commerce capabilities through mergers and acquisitions. This is what I've been talking about with the guy who came from Intuit, who was responsible for 50% of their growth. He grew through acquisitions, and I think that's going to be a key component of PayPal's growth moving forward. And they talk about, combined with compelling valuation, what the market views as broadly disappointing could put the ultimate PayPal bottom. Unappreciated optionality at PayPal, bolstered by the company's roughly $6 billion in net cash and its potential to deliver almost $20 billion in cumulative free cash flow through 2025. That free cash flow, ladies and gentlemen, it's the secret. While his model assumed the company will continue buybacks, Jeffries thinks that PayPal's next chief executive will consider some M&A. We've long held that PayPal needs to acquire a card-present processor to boost its Venmo and in-store monetization initiatives. This may be even more relevant today, blah, blah, blah. So that's pretty exciting. And he says they're forgotten. So that is from the analyst over at Truist. And that's what we've been saying for the last few weeks. Advanced Auto Parts. Here's an interesting article from Spencer Jacob in the Wall Street Journal. An auto parts retailer crashed. It can be fixed. They've got their new CEO in. Now they've got a new CFO coming in. It's a new regime. Everywhere you go, once you get out of the tri-state area, there's an Advanced Auto Parts on every corner. They'll cut the non-profitable stores, they'll improve the profitable stores, and they'll be back in the next couple of years for sure. And at the margin of safety, the price is, stock is trading at, we think it's priced in a lot of bad news. On the China front, Alibaba's hiring 2,000 graduates as big tech crackdown eases, so they're back into growth mode. Chinese regulator vows to boost vitality, efficiency, and appeal of the stock market in response to Politburo meetings. So they're telling the insurance company to buy stocks. At the end of the day, they're going to have to do more stimulus. It's just a question of when. We went into that ad infinitum last week. China unveils measures to revive stock market. So they're buying stocks. They have their plunge protection team in place. And they're going to realize that it's going to take more than that. Earnings beat from Baidu, they crushed it this week, just like Alibaba did a couple weeks back. And keep in mind, the other catalyst besides the Chinese government waking up is going to be the Fed getting out of the way, bonds starting to get bid, dollar resume its weakening, so those flows can go back into emerging markets and Baba will be a big beneficiary. So, you know, we keep talking a lot about Baba and all the great things Baba's doing, but if you look at the chart, it basically looks like the emerging markets index, it looks like the KWEB, it looks like every other major Chinese and emerging market stock. They're just not going to work until they do, and when they do, and when that dollar weakness resumes, and when the Fed's out of the way, they're going to take off. And you're seeing, we'll cover it in the article of the week, in aggregate, China Tech has shot the lights out in earnings season this quarter. And they're not getting credit for it yet, but when they do, it will all at once. Insight, China quietly recruits overseas chip talent at US tightens curbs. You know, I think this is an unintended consequence of abrupt emotional political decisions. What we found historically is by limiting our technology to perceived foes, what happens is they wind up developing it domestically, and then they become competitors when we could have just supplied them and made all the money. So I think that's starting to happen right now. If they want something bad enough, they find a way to do it, and they'll just pay these guys double whatever they were making in the West. They'll come to the East, they'll live in Hong Kong like rock stars, they'll make money hand over fist, and the Chinese will have whatever they need as it relates to AI chips and the like. Hong Kong gains, Raimundo meets with China's ambassador to the US. So we may get a 1-2 punch here with Secretary US Commerce Secretary Gina Raimundo meeting with China, and then the Fed getting out of the way. So that could be constructive. She's preparing for her 4-day visit to China next week. Xi Feng urged the Commerce Secretary to help overcome difficulties in the same boat, etc., etc., etc. China urges banks to boost stock market investments to support market. So the games are starting to begin. Some general market stuff. This is from Isabel Net on Twitter. After closing below the 50-day moving average for the first time in 4 months or more, the S&P has gained 14.1% on average 12 months later since 1990. So you can see all the instances here. This is from Fundstrat via Carl Quintanilla. We would be buyers of equity starting Wednesday, even if we're only in quote, close proximity to a low. Since 2003, there are 7 instances the S&P down 2 weeks prior to Jackson Hole. 6 of the 7 instances equities rose in the week post Jackson Hole. So you can see the average coming out and what that looks like afterwards. And then from Seth Golden, blow off top in the 10-year treasury yield. 10-year has made a 10-year high for the first time in greater than 200 days. Only achieves and holds such a feat of strength 2% of its entire existence. Hence, probability of blow off top is 98%. And it shows what the equity markets do 6 months and 12 months out, which, you know, median being 11.3. Average max gain is 13.1, max loss is 5.2. So things setting up on a constructive front there. Earnings we've been talking about. This is from, this is from Ed Yardeni via Seth. And it just shows that in the last week, earnings have gone up yet again from 245.80 to 246.42. Everyone remembers when they were at 240. You know, 4 or 5 months ago, everyone said they had to get to 215 or 210. They're actually going up, not down. And this is from Bespoke Investment Group. It just shows sector by sector the 10-day advanced decline lines and how these groups are really starting to look oversold, whether it's utilities, materials, S&P, I mean, pretty basically every single one. And when they get this oversold, they have a tendency to bounce. So we're getting, you know, we started to see the bounce. We'll see if it can get some follow through after the Jackson Hole meeting. And I think I'm kind of pleased to see a little weakness today. I was worried we were going to go into the Fed meeting hot and they were going to just douse it with water. I like that we're going in a little bit weak. That could be very promising from a trading perspective. This is the credit card delinquencies. Everyone's worried about the consumer. You can see that their credit card delinquencies are at all-time lows. You know, modestly elevating, still dramatically below trend, nothing near a crisis or a recession. So that's all good. At the starting gate, stock market and sentiment results. This is our article of the week. And now that we've had the 5% pullback we anticipated in recent weeks, many pundits are once again prognosticating the beginning of the end. When you dig under the surface, however, the clearer story looks like the end of the beginning, and that most stocks are just at the starting gate or coming out of and starting to begin major cyclical recoveries. We're going to go through a bunch here. So as I've stated before, the key to making big money in this business is, quote, zooming out. When you get caught up in the short-term noise, it takes you out of many of the best companies whose recoveries can be doubles, triples, and more in reasonable time frames over a couple of years. To do these stocks below look like they are near a top or just beginning a multi-year recovery? We're going to go through them one by one in a second. If you feel like you missed the rally or if there's nowhere to put new money to work, you've got what we gently refer to as stinking thinking. You've been watching too many clickbait bears on television and it's cost you a lot of money to listen to them. Some of these, and especially, and I feel really bad for the people who listened to them last October and last November and last December when the market was down 27% and they were all on all these big names and you know who they are saying the market was going another 20% lower. And somehow, miraculously, they're still on TV every single week, which is mind-boggling to me. But so it cost people a lot of money. It really spooked a lot of people out of the markets. And some of these companies, some of the companies we're going to talk about have already taken off, but most are just coming out of the starting gate and nowhere near intrinsic value, full recovery, opinion, not advice. Now, Always opinionated advice. Click on terms under hedgefundtips.com, as you know. You need only look at the chart of the All Country World Index below to see the percentage of stocks below their pre-pandemic highs. So, you know, you had that monster rally out of COVID. You came back and, you know, basically corrected massively last year, but we're still well below the pre-pandemic levels. And, you know, a good 48% of global stocks are below pre-COVID highs, which were achieved in most cases in late 2019. So here we are 4 years later. And many of them have improved their business conditions since then. So if your hedge fund manager or money manager can't consistently find quality businesses on sale and have the fortitude, experience, or knowledge to stick with them through the short-term volatility until price reaches or exceeds intrinsic value, hire someone who can. And many of you have done just that in recent days, weeks, and months, and we're very grateful for that. The smartest, most successful people in the world focus on what they do best. They build their businesses and careers and outsource the rest. So this guy apparently said, well, anyone can cut hair. And he says, thanks to YouTube, I now know how to cut my own hair. And you can see what that looks like. These successful folks know that even if you think you have all the ingredients, all the companies, all the stocks, unless you know how to mix them in the right proportions and know when to take each one out of the oven, from many years of experience, you're not going to produce world-class cookies or results. Here's PayPal, for instance. The price fell 81% from the peak over the last 2 years. Earnings power, so the price fell 81% from the peak, but the earnings power, neither the earnings power nor the revenue fell in that magnitude or actually at all. If you look at the revenues per share since 2015 are now up 8 times, 350%. And even since 2018, they're up double, and the stock price is just about actually lower. Cash flow per share, same story. It dropped a little bit in 2002. It's going to recover this year, it looks like, back to all-time high levels. Same thing with earnings per share recovering. Again, this was just a cyclical trough. Everyone's puking out. This is forced structural liquidation by institutions. And then once you're out of sellers, people sit back, they look, you get a couple analysts out, like the guy from Truist, and people start to pay attention. Also, you have the new CEO, which we just talked about. Revenues continue to grow. I mean, it's kind of comical when you think about 2018, revenues were $15 billion. Now they're $30 billion. Revenues have doubled, prices probably about 20% lower. And it's just the overshoot of despondency and euphoria. No, everyone wants to buy it up here. No one wants to buy it down here. I remember all the experts on TV when PayPal was in the 200s and 300s saying, why the hell would I buy banks with pens and branches and all that stuff when I could just buy fintech? And sure enough, that was the top, basically fintech to get my financials exposure. And sure enough, that was basically the top in fintech. And now that these things have all rolled over, no one wants to touch them with a 10-foot pole. And by the way, there's some interesting things happening with PayPal on the stablecoin front. For those of you who are into crypto and blockchain and all that stuff, they seem to have a competitive advantage. That's not at all part of our thesis, but it's nice to see that they're playing in that world, because if risk comes back on, you're going to see the crypto stuff get a bid. And if they're a player within that, we'll get some of the benefits of that momentum money coming in to be some of the first bidders in the stock, which is positive. But look, this business, through thick and thin, with the exception of last year, has been compounding capital at double digits for more than a decade. And that's going to continue as it recovers and as it gains share through this short-term trough. And that's why we like that. Disney price fell 58% from the peak. In this case, revenues per share continue to go up. So the business is continuing to grow. It's been mismanaged. Iger is back to fix it, which is why we're interested in the stock. But they continue, as long as you have the top line, you can get someone to fix the bottom line. And that's exactly what Iger is in doing. The bottom line has gotten hurt. It's starting to recover. It bottomed obviously in 2020 when all the parks were closed. Now China's reopening. Now the movie game's back on. They're fixing the streaming. They're going to do stuff with ESPN. They did the partnership with Penn National, et cetera, for betting. Historically, it's a decent compounder. Of late, it's been an impaired compounder. But this is the key thing. From Oliver Wendell Holmes, the young man knows all the rules. The rules are you buy quality businesses when they're compounders and when they generate a meaningful cash, which just still generates meaningful cash, which is why we're also in it. But it's temporarily impaired. And this is when you want to know the exceptions, because in the case of Disney, no one's going to replicate their parks and no one's going to replicate their content library. And that's when you would make an exception to the rule, looking at it down 60%. It's not many times in history you get to buy Disney down 60%. One of those times was the Great Financial Crisis. It recovered to new highs within 2 years. The other time was the tech wreck. It recovered within about 3 or 4 years, but it certainly recovered, was a double within the first year and a half. So I think we're going to see a similar situation where, maybe we get a double in 24 months, and then whether we get to new highs or not is to be determined. We'll see what the business looks like, what the succession plan looks like, how the execution's going, but this should be just fine. Alibaba, we've been through a million times. I think that, if you look back at this 2015 to 2017 bottoming process, it took about 2 years to get through here. We've already gone through the trough. We're doing some of these silly check backs. That'll be a function of the Fed and the dollar. But when we go, it's going to go straight up. And just like even this period here, 2018 to 2019, this is probably a more similar type of situation that we're looking at right here in terms of how it bottomed straight down, then a check back, then some just noise for months, which we have had this noise for months, and then this final check back, and then you start to rally and a little choppy on the way up. But this thing went from 160. No, I'm sorry, 150 to 319. It looks like in about less than a year. Once it goes, it goes. And then here you had from call it 80 to 211 in 15 months the last time. So I don't think it's going to take 2 years. It looks more like 1.5, and looks like we're pressing up against it. Maybe you get one more red bar or something before we take off. But when you zoom out, that's how you make money. We've gone through their numbers. Revenues per share up 10x since 2015. Cash flow up. That's on estimates. So for this year, it's up 10x since 2014. Cash flow per share 2 to 11, so 6x to 12 basically earnings. So anyway, you see it. It's compounds capital at double digit. They're bringing in the share count a bit. Revenues continue to grow. They just had their record first quarter ever in the history. So this chart's misleading, because if you look at this high point, you say, oh, they're down from 2 quarters ago. But Q3 is their strong quarter. Q1, here's Q1, here's Q1. Look at that big jump from Q1 to Q1 to Q1 to Q1. I mean, it's just monstrous. And so we're looking for some good things in Q3. Probably get up to here. And that's pretty exciting to see. This is interesting from a Bank of America's HeartNet. The risk of a China credit event already spooking global markets, but we would expect China event quickly elicits big international policy response. Despise China stocks like US REITs. Thus, the best hedge should policymakers cause bond yields and Chinese RMB to both pull back from the precipice. So that's a key thing. We've got some policymakers speaking, obviously Jackson Hole, obviously ECB, Lagarde, and a lot of things that could happen that takes this out from the precipice. Now, if you look at this, April 2020, look at the last time China 10-year yield got this low and what happened next. That was 2020, straight up from 170 to 319 in less than a year. That was Alibaba. Then you had August 2016. That would have been right here. Went from 80. Alibaba went from $80 to 210 after they pulled it back from the precipice. So you don't get these type of lows without this type of situation in the 10-year yield. 2016 was the time before that that it got this low, straight up. Then you had 2009, which we don't have the data for that. But we're at a good point where things tend to inflect. China bank shares are not exactly heralding a meltdown. This does not look like a country where all the real estate's going to go to complete hell. They'll do the extend and pretend and the bailouts and all the things that they do every single time. If China is imploding, why isn't it reflected in global commodity prices? You can see here, Macau's tourism arrivals are returning to pre-COVID levels in 2018. It took them a long time. But for those of you who are pessimistic on 2011, look at this straight line up. It is just started turning huge and it's going straight up. And that's why you see the CEOs on TV, Wyndham, MGM, Starbucks, et cetera, saying that the last 8 weeks have been through the roof when they were reporting earnings for China. And we saw it in tech earnings, and I think we're gonna see it more and more coming forward, which could be, there have been some articles out this week, thanks to Marcel for sending over, that does China actually need stimulus or do investors just need patience? I think it's a combination of both. I would love the government to get impatient and just accelerate the process for us. I think the process will work out with or without stimulus, but I'd like them to make an emotional trade and get our position rocking and rolling sooner rather than later. So we'll likely see that, because we do most every time that the China 10-year yield gets down to these levels. Someone steps in and saves it. The RMB has been weak, but has not broken lower against the US dollar. Again, we saw this at all the lows, discussed the 2016, the 2018, the 2020, even the 2020 lows. And here we are again. The difference is Alibaba is not at $58, it's at $88 at this low, which is the same low that we had in October when they took action and things turned around very, very abruptly. If you remember the last time we got down here with the RMB, Alibaba rallied from, you know, 58 to 120 in a matter of like weeks. So we're gonna see stuff like that again. Bank of America, Chinese internet companies, Baidu, Baba, Tencent, JD remain largely stable amid macro uncertainties. That's as he's talking about their credit. On an aggregated basis, Baidu, Baba, JD, Tencent posted revenue growth of plus 7% year on year and EBITDA growth of plus 30% year on year during the first half of 2023, with EBITDA margin up 3 percentage points year on year at 18%. We draw comfort from their generally solid cash, net cash position, with the exception of Tencent. We don't own Tencent. And strong ability to generate cash flow, which we talked about. Their cash flow was up, I think, 71% year on year this quarter in the case of Alibaba. Advanced Auto Parts, we just talked about. The stock is down 72%, not the earnings power or revenue. If you look here, the sales per share have been pretty stable. They flattened out year on year, but they're not really going down. And they've been growing every single year. They've been bringing the share count down from, you know, 72 million down to 59 million. Their sales have gone, you know, let's just call it, when was the last time? In the last, from, you know, they're hovering between 10 billion and now they're like going to be just over 11 billion this year. So they haven't really had a huge dip. Where they got hit a little bit is in cash flow per share has come down and earnings per share. So this is a function of mismanagement, but now they have a new CEO and a new CFO. And what I said is, as long as you have the revenues, you can get someone to fix the bottom line. That's, you know, cutting costs and getting back to basics. And you see it over and over and over again by good stewards. And in the case of Disney, we know Iger's proven. And in the case of Advanced Auto Parts, we like the new CEOs as well. So that's what I'm trying to explain to you guys, is that when and gals is that when you see all this day to day, like, does it do, all the Fed meetings that we hemmed and hawed of over the last 10 years, it had zero impact on the ability of these companies to continue to grow revenue per share, to continue to grow cash flow per share, to continue to compound capital at double-digit rates. It had no bearing. And here we are sitting, biting our fingernails. Is Powell going to say this or that? At the end of the day, the difference, you won't even be able to see a 3 percentage point move on this chart, or this chart, or this chart. But on a day-to-day basis, you'll log into your accounts, you'll look at your P&L and your trading account, you'll say, oh my God, there must be something wrong. I think Advanced Auto Parts sales must have fallen 20% overnight. No, Powell walk up and he said something stupid and the thing went down for 3 minutes because a bunch of traders were acting emotionally in the short term on the voting machine and irrationally in the long term on the weighing machine, which takes into account fundamentals, and that creates your opportunity to build wealth. And these type of situations, they're abundant. I mean, remember when we were buying Cooper Standard down here at $5 and down from 146, everyone thought we were crazy. Now, then it went up to 22, or it went up to 19, then it pulled back to 10, and everyone's like, oh. And by the way, everyone bought at 18, everyone puked back out at 10, then it went up to 22. Everyone's, pinging me, oh, should I buy at 22? I'm like, we're not adding at these levels. Now it's back to 16 or 15 because of the UAW strikes. I hope it goes to 13 or 14. I don't think it's going to happen, but we added at the margins around 16. We hope to add a little bit more around 13 or 14. We don't think we're going to get the chance, but you never know. I mean, I got a here. Well, do you want to ask me anything question from Steve Frampton? Read an interesting bio on UAW President Sean Fain in the Washington Post. They really painted him as an old school union guy, e.g., his heroes got shot for the cause. Wondering what and how you think about this in relation to Cooper Standard. I could care less. If they, number one, this quarter is going to be great because they're jamming production in ahead of what's expected to be the strike. And so if you don't get the strike, you're going to have a super good quarter. If you do get the strike, you probably get a decent quarter. But at the end of the day, it's not going to change the supply-demand dynamic. You've got pent-up demand for 3 years when you had no supply chain and no semiconductors. And now you've got the dealer incentives and you've got flooding the market from the Koreans, like I said you would with affordable cars. The American OEMs are playing catch up on that front. They're all going to produce. So if they take a month off because this guy wants to get shot for his cause, who gives a sh who cares? Okay, is really what it comes down to. It's like my guess is maybe it goes down to the wire on September 14th. Maybe they resolve something sooner. But I think the worst case scenario is probably unlikely. And if it does play out, it's a month of no production, all these things go down, and we get one last bite at the apple. So I really don't care. Don't think about it. If you're running on leverage, you would care and think about it. I'm not. I've got the right partners that understand the process, and that's why they became successful in the first place. So 3M price fell 50%, 57% from the peak. Not their earnings power or revenue. Sales continue to increase. Little softer this year, expected to recover next year. But when I say softer, I'm talking about a few percent. And then cash flow is still robust. Earnings are still robust. We're talking 3% on the top line, maybe 10% on the bottom line, and the stock is down 57%. They've compounded capital in the mid-teens to low 20s, as far as the eye can see over the last 15 years, every single year, including these quote-unquote weak years. And you had the general settlement with the Forever Chemicals. Now we're waiting on the earplugs, which should happen before the end of the year. That's the next catalyst. And then we can put some of this stuff behind us, and the market can start to value it on the basis of their innovation, consistently delivering, and doing phenomenal things. Baxter, that's one we discussed in the context of having a lot of their revenues internationally as the dollar resumes its downtrend. And here's a company that fell 59% from their peak. Their earnings power and their revenue did not. As a matter of fact, the revenues continued to go up every single year. Sales have continued to go up every single year. Return on capital, high single digits, low double digits. Return on equity, low 20s still. And even the earnings power, it's been a little, it came off the 2022 peaks, but barely versus the stock falling 59%. And that's what creates the opportunity. You've had these type of falls in 2011, you had it in 2003, and they always recover. It's just a question of how many months or how many years. But when you get a double over a couple of years, that's a good IRR, and we're very comfortable with that. Crown Castle, we discussed this briefly, price is down 51%. Why? Really no other reason other than rates have gone up and these things trade inversely with rates. So this is a levered play on TLT. The demand is just going to increase with 5G rollout, et cetera. You look at their cash flow per share. You look at their revenues per share. I mean, this stuff continues to grow and the stock is down 51%. So this is not the only thing we look at by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, these things just, they're abundant and everyone's focused on, is NVIDIA going to go up $3 more? Like, honestly, that's like the last thing on my mind. Like, for me, there's no margin of safety because they've already promised the world if they miss one quarter that stock's going to be down 75%. These stocks are already down 75%, so we don't have to worry about that. All we have to worry about is how long it takes them to recover, never mind actually go on to grow to new highs, because their fundamentals are actually supporting well into new highs. And to get back to new highs, many of these have to go up 100, 200, 300%. And then they'll be in the state of euphoria. You get multiple expansion and they can not only recover, but actually start to expand. And we're excited. Even a, you know, what's considered the most hated business in the world, like VF Corp. Obviously, a little worry about their debts, but their return on capital is still double digits. Sales are still growing every single year, despite Vans being slightly out of favor. They've got North Face. They've got, and by the way, China's reopening. They love Vans. They love North Face. They love all the brands that VF Corp has. Cash flow per share is still healthy. Earnings per share is still healthy. And yet the stock is down 81%. Okay. So that tells you everything you need to know. But this thing, just to get back to its recent highs, you got a four bagger, whether that takes a, you know, couple years, like it took a year and a half during the great financial crisis lows, it fell, looks like again, about 80%. And then in the tech wreck recession, it fell again, about 80%. And it just takes a year, 2 years to recover. And then in the case of the great financial crisis and the tech wreck, it not only recovered, but it made new highs. In the case of the tech wreck, it doubled. Its peak was double its previous high. So that would mean off the bottom, it was a five bagger. In the post-great financial crisis, it was a 4x, or I'm sorry, 88, so five, almost a six bagger, so 500% not only recovered but actually expanded. So just to get back to peak, you're looking at almost a five bagger here, four and a half bagger. So that may take a few years, but I mean, just back out the IRR, or you can trade every single headline about, you know, the next bear that comes on, or Jay Powell, or you know, all these guys with all their opinions, and you know, it just focus on what matters is what I'm, the point that I'm trying to get across. Generac fell 83% from its peak, not its earnings power or its revenue. Yes, the revenue is down high single digits, but it looks to recover next year. Cash flow barely budged. It's going to go to all-time highs next year. Earnings per share, same thing. It'll be back up to its 2021 high water mark when it was trading at $524 a share, probably by next year. If we get a few storms in the next couple of months, hurricane season, maybe it'll recover a lot faster. Sales continue to go up, and again, return on capital, double-digit compounder. Stock's down 83%. And by the way, so people ask me, like, why aren't you into private deals? And the reason I'm not into private deals is because the private market never gives you the type of discounts you can get in the public markets. This is so irrational. If someone said to you, let's say you owned a chain of Jersey Mike's, let's say you owned 20 franchises of Jersey Mike's, and your sales were down, let's just call it 10% this year, okay? And so you had, let's see, you had 20 franchises, let's say they were doing $1 million a year each, trading at 2x revenue, so $40 million. You get 1 year where sales were down 10% because, you know, construction took longer than you expected, or you had to close one down for a couple months to fix the machines or whatever. But sales were down 10%. The value of your businesses is 40 million, you know, call it the last 3 years average. And someone comes in and offers you $8 million for your 20 franchises. Like literally you would call the cops. And yet this happens every single day in public markets. And when it happens, rather than people taking the offer, they run for the hills. It's the most unbelievable thing. And I don't think anything's ever going to change it, which means we're going to be in business for a very, very long time because people are going to continue to make these type of emotional short-term decisions. And we're going to have the staying power and steadfastness and low leverage so that we can just sit through this noise until we start the recovery process and not only make new highs, but expand well beyond that and with good quality businesses. Same with Stanley Black & Decker. Boy, I thought this was going to be a short call. I get excited about these actually when I go one by one. Stanley Black & Decker, again, they had a couple percent off in sales. Their cash flow dropped a bit. It's expected to recover next year. Their dividend, they kept their dividend despite that short-term noise. Their sales are basically, you know, down a hair this year. They're expected to recover next year. And the stock was down 68%. It's moved up a lot. And by the way, this is also very interesting. You know, buying it in the 70s is very exciting, but you can barely see it. Look, it barely looks like it's even gone up. It's in now a $90 stock from 70. And it's like, oh my God, that's a good move. Should I take profits? I don't know. You tell me, take a look at these instances. Does it look like we should take profits here? Or should we just sit through this short-term August and September seasonal noise and stop worrying about hedging a 3% move and actually just sitting tight until we double and triple our money? How about that? Does that sound like a good idea? Great, sign me up. Bank of America, same story. Price fell 46% from its recent peak. Earnings power and revenue, I mean, it's solid. It's been, you know, basically flat, but the stock is down a little bit. Revenues are growing. They're picking up fixed income share. I put out that article. They've got a return on equity of double digits. They've got the best management in the business, and you can't give the stock away because you had this little nonsense in March and everyone's worried about commercial real estate. Brian Moynihan's talked about that ad infinitum, his commercial real estate exposure. And I think commercial real estate's going to be a lot better than people expect as people are getting forced back to work. Amazon price fell 57%. This is Amazon, one of the greatest businesses in the world, the Alibaba of America, as I'd like to say. price fell 57% from the peak, not earnings power or revenue. If anything, revenues continued to grow, cash flow continued to grow, earnings, okay, took a little trough last year. Not a big deal if their cash flow was up. They overinvested in warehouses and all that stuff. They're clearing that out. They had restructuring costs, et cetera. And they continue to compound capital at double digits every single year. And yet you couldn't give it away in the fall when we were pounding the table. Now it's up, from 81 to 130. And it's like, oh, should we take profits? I don't know. You know, can you take a 20% haircut like it was recovering in 2023? It fell back, 20% on its way up and then it doubled again. I think I'd like to stay put if it's one of the best quality businesses in the world and just suck it up. Don't hedge. Don't do all this nonsense for short-term fluctuations. Know what you own. Know the business. Know how you deal with it in a private market and just sit tight and, you know, become wealthy. Like the guy in from Sovereign who we talk about all the time, Richard Chandler. He would put these positions on, and while everyone worried about the short-term noise, he went and learned how to play golf and became a 12 handicap in a couple of years, learned how to speak Italian. And that's what you want to do. Once you know your process and it's repeatable and durable, that's what you can do. Citi, same thing, 48% from its recent peak, trading at 70% of book, if not less, I think. What is the tangible book here? Yeah, 104. It's trading at $40 on $100 of, so it's trading at a 60% discount to book. That's mind-boggling. Earnings came down a little bit this year. There's no deal flow, ladies and gentlemen, and these are levered plays with the money center banks, Citibank, Bank of America. They're levered plays on animal spirits coming back when the Fed steps away and you get deal flow, M&A, new offerings. IPO market comes out. We started to see a taste of it with Kava. We've got a bunch lined up with Instacart and a couple others in September. Then you got the huge one, Arm Holdings. That'll be the make or break. If that one works, then you're going to be off to the races. The guy wants $70 billion. He might have to walk that back down to 40 or 50, get it done, and then we'll be off to the races. And these banks will make money like no tomorrow, 2 years of pent-up demand. Vornado, you know, we were talking about this thing at 14. Now it's up to 22 or whatever it is. You couldn't give it away. Now everyone wants it. Now it's pulling back to shake out the late money. But you see these recoveries, just like the great financial crisis. You get these steep pullbacks to get all the late money nervous, get them shaken out. And then, you know, the people who stick with it wind up with four baggers in a couple of years. And that'll be the same type of thing. You look at funds from operations. You look at the revenues. It's all held in. I mean, yes, some of the leases won't be renewed and some will be renewed at higher rates. Don't forget, they're A properties. They've got Grand Central and Penn Station cornered. They've got all the best properties around the travel hubs. You can't replicate that. I mean, it's like you can never replicate it. So just be patient is really all. And don't bet against Steve Roth. He's the best in the business. Google. Price fell 45% from the peak, not earnings or revenue. Same type of thing. We were pounding the table on this last fall. Now it's up 60-65% since then. Okay, do we say, oh, let's take our profits? I don't know. Do you really want to be out of this business? You got a once in a 10-15 year opportunity to buy the thing 50% off. And just because it's up 60% off the lows, do you want to take profits or hedge or whatever? This is a compounding machine. Why would you do that? Market serves these up every 10 years and you want to automatically piss it away just because you made some money in a few months? Hang tight, let it pull back and shake out the weak sisters you got in at 130. And if you've got some extra capital, maybe you can top up at 120. We don't tend to buy up, we buy down. We kind of have all the Google that we want. But you know, look at this business. It was never impaired for even a minute. It was impaired just because the entire group, it grew cash flow last year while the stock market was collapsing. It grew earnings, it grew revenue. It compounded capital at over 23%. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Here's one tiny, tiny thing we mentioned, C, which is kind of like, it's another emerging market play. We want to start to lean into emerging markets ahead of the crowd. This company's grown revenues from, you know, 414 million to 13 billion in like 6 years. And it's trading at prices from 4 years ago. So right now they're doing about $13.5 billion of revenue. You can buy it for the same price you could when they were doing $2 billion of revenue. So they've grown revenue by six times. They're just now starting to be cash flow positive and earnings positive, which is why it got up on our radar. Earnings are growing. They had a weak quarter this quarter, so it sold off some more. You know, started to rebound. So I think at these levels, it starts to get interesting. Could it go down to, what is that, $36? Could it go down to $25 before it? I mean, it could, but it's got $10 a share in cash and it's growing revenues like crazy. It's trading at barely two times revenues for a growth company that's in one of the fastest growing regions in the country. It's basically like a mini Alibaba for the areas that Alibaba is not that big. They are competing against Alibaba a little bit, so you don't want to have too much if you've got a lot of Alibaba. But, you know, these type of things you have to kind of pay attention to. XBI, biotech. So bottom last May, down 65% from the peak, similar to 2016. Fed gets out of the way, this thing will start to recover as animal spirits come back, as the banking comes back, as all of it. It's all tied. There's a high correlation, unfortunately, but that's very fortunate because I think we're at the inflection point of change. Intel, we were pounding the table at 25 bucks. It went up to 37 bucks. Now it's 34 bucks. So, you know, it could pull back down and retest. Everyone will be panicked. We'll be sitting tight. And then at $50, $60 in a couple of years, we'll say, okay, the computer and the data center business is back, which is all we were betting on. Do we sell here after making a quick double, or is Gelsinger's fantasy of being a major player against Nvidia coming to pass? And if it is, then this thing could be $100-$200 stock. And if it is, we'll hold at that point. If it's not, we'll take our double and redeploy elsewhere. And then finally, bonds, TLT, same setup as 2018. Over and over, you see this 2012, 2013. Totally oversold. If you look at the CFTC, I know there are some articles out by Bloomberg, like people are positioned long TLT. Absolutely false. Look at the CFTC commitments of traders. They're the most short that they've ever been. And anytime they've gotten this short, you get a huge rebound. And maybe tomorrow's the catalyst and we see a bid. We're starting to see some front running the last 2 days where it's been bid up a little bit. And that's why you saw equities rally yesterday. So we'll see what happens. But the perma bears on TV are like the birds in a farmer's field. The birds take a bit of crop from time to time. They cause the short-term volatility and cause a little trouble. But if you spend all your days chasing or paying attention to the negative birds, it takes you out of the field from planting your seeds and gaining an abundant future harvest. So don't spend all your time chasing the birds. Spend all your time planting the seeds. Focus on taking advantage of once-in-a-generation opportunities and ignore the short-term noise. And as you can see, chart by chart, these really are all once in a generation. If you define a generation as a decade, decade and a half, 2 decades, a lot of once in a generation opportunities for high quality businesses, and people feel like they missed everything, and they've missed nothing if they're looking at the right businesses or they have the right manager doing it for them in the right combination, the right proportion, and knowing when to harvest at fair value. So the negative ne'er-do-wells never wind up with much money in the long term. Even those who get lucky on one or two trades in a career and make a lot of money in a short period of time, they sound the smartest on TV, but they earn the least over time. Fortunes are made consistently buying high quality, cash generative businesses and assets when they're out of favor and holding them through volatility until they reach or exceed full intrinsic value, not predicting the next apocalypse. Those gamblers who hit on the roulette wheel once in a career predicting a crash have a tendency to give it all back to the casino over time because their process was never durable and never repeatable. Not to mention, the end of the world only happens once. So for those of you buying the negative narrative, there are dozens of stocks like the ones above we are currently working on for new money. And when some of these hit our fair value targets and are harvested and the positions need to be replaced after we take profits, this condition will not last forever, but we are constructive on markets as far as the eye can see. And this is the Sloomer secular chart that we've been covering. Actually, we were one of the first ones to put this out in 2020. I think you can go back to one of our articles in August, and he's put it out in a much, you know, fancier picture. If you know me for a while, I'm not really good with graphics and all that fancy stuff, but I get the message across. And I love the way he's presented it here. And basically he's pointing to S&P 14,000 by 2034. And I think that's a really reasonable outlook as we sit here at, you know, 4,300 or wherever we are, and the amount of opportunities that's going to create. So yeah, you can sit in the indices and make money, but boy, oh boy, when you can find these businesses, like, you know, your 20 Jersey Mike's revenues were down 10% a year, and someone's offering you, $8 million on 40 million of value. It just doesn't exist in the private markets, only the public markets. And that's why we love what we do. It's a treasure hunt every day. So expect bouts of volatility on the surface, like we're seeing today. Look for opportunities under the surface, rinse and repeat. So here we are in the cycle. If this is correct, this Ned Davis research composite, you pull back in early August, and then you start to find a bottom, and then you recover to new highs, and then you just grind sideways until the election year. That's fine. Through all this noise, I think what you're going to see is emerging markets get bid materially as the Fed gets out of the way. So even if the NASDAQ is grinding like this purports, and these things have never worked out perfect, but they're good kind of barometers, there's plenty to do. So shorter term market, retail people got more bearish, fear and greed got neutral, and National Association of Active Investment Managers, they took their equity exposure down to 59% just in time for things to start to bounce. Moving right along, earnings, top 30 weights estimates in the last 60 days for this year are up by 3.36. For next year are up by 2.25. Pretty exciting to see. Communication services, similar story, up 2.26 for this year. This is the aggregate of the top 30 weighted earnings in the sector. Estimates in the last 60 days up 2.64% for the next year. Some economic data this week that actually matters. The only thing I could point to is continuing claims today. Came in a little lighter than expected. And initial jobless claims were still over 230,000. People were expecting 240. So nothing material there other than what you are seeing is wage inflation now coming down. The average starting salaries are coming down. So employers are starting to get a handle on control, which means people are going to be back in the offices because people do not have the luxury to say, you know, if you don't let me work from home, I'll just go somewhere else, because the power is shifting. In the last 3 years, it's been in the hands of the employer. Now it's more balanced. You still have to pay up for good talent like any time. But in aggregate, that wage acceleration is easing quite a bit. And those are the type of things that the Fed wants to see. So let's go to our questions. Ask me anything questions here. Okay. So Daniel, no, that's not one. Okay, we did the UAW stuff. Okay. All right. Vinod Nemagauda asks, hi, Tom. Thanks for your input and insights. Need your input on Nike. Stock is down a lot. Is inventory shrink the main reason? And C, Limited is down big, and now they're looking profitable company too. So C, we just covered. Nike, you know, Nike's kind of down. It's on the Foot Locker stuff, but Foot Locker, you know, it's partially hurt because Nike is trying to go more direct. There was a sneaker glut, so they're probably working through inventory. I think Nike works for a trade. I liked it better in 80 or 90. But let's just take a look. I think what you have here is a similar situation to Estee Lauder, where the whole business is getting smacked because everyone's so committed to negative headlines on China, except the people who actually report earnings and tell you that things are going well in China. So this year, they're going to take a little hit in earnings, work through some inventory, waiting for China to recover. For me, look, I think this is a great quality business. I think I'd love for a long-term play, I'd want to see it come down further. I may never get that opportunity. For a trade, you probably get a nice bounce here. It's been down, I think, 12 days in a row. So maybe in the next month, it bounces back up to 120, 130. You're probably okay, but there are better things to do. For me, the margin of safety is not great enough for it to be a position in the portfolio. But it could be. It's just not. They're just better things. Hey, Tom, is Foot Locker at the levels you're attractive enough to consider? We covered Foot Locker the other week, I think, Kayla. It probably does bounce from here. The problem with Foot Locker is that it's kind of a low quality business. And people are more focused on services now than goods. I think it probably works on a trade. I would never put this in as a portfolio position. I just don't think it's a good enough business. But I like your thinking. I think it is going to work for you for a trade, but it's just not for me. There are other things to do. Okay. Just working off a iPhone here. Rasa, what are your thoughts on Roblox? It's oversold on the daily, retesting the bottom range, and my children are into it in an unhealthy way. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, Roblox is popular. It's also expensive. That's the problem. Wow, 26 bucks down from 140. This is one of those where you close your eyes and hold your nose. The problem for us is that It's not making any money, but it is growing revenues quite a bit. So you should try to convince your kids when they ask for Roblox or whatever they call that. My kids ask for it too, is to convince them to buy shares. You say, would you rather spend money on building fake houses in Roblox, or would you rather own a piece of the business where you can get paid on all the kids that are wasting their money on fake houses and actually make enough money to buy real houses? And then this way, if you give them money for Roblox, you're guaranteed to lose. And if you give them money for the stock, you know, they could have a 5 or 10 bagger by the time they go to college. That's probably a better way to play it. And if it goes to zero, which, you know, there's no way. This is one of those we're predicting the future stocks, which is not what I do for a living. There's no track record, so you're just making a bet on the future. You know, if it goes to zero, you're in the same place. I don't think it's going to zero. I think it's probably going to continue to grow. But it's losing money in the short term. It's a harder environment to raise money. But I think at these levels, your margin of safety is high. You just, when there's so many unknowns, you just have to size it accordingly. So like, you know, if a normal position would be 6 or 8 or 10% where you had high conviction and a proven cash generative machine, this might be a 1, 2, or 3%. And if you get wiped, it doesn't matter. And if you have a 5 bagger, it's a contributor. But for us, it wouldn't be a position, but I can see why it's probably interesting at these levels for you, Rasa. Just size it accordingly and do it in the size that it can go to zero and you'd be comfortable. And if it's a 5 bagger, you make some money. But that'll take some time. Martin Floriani says, hi, Tom, I really enjoyed your 200th episode. Congratulations. Also, thanks for sharing your family and golf stories. By the way, golf stories, we lost the 4th round of the Garrett. I will say that one of our opponents in the match is a scratch, and he made 0 mistakes the entire day. I mean, the guy was just unbelievable. I missed a couple 6-foot putts that could have helped at least get us in contention to tying. I didn't deliver those. That's not going to happen again. I've got a solution for my putting. I've spent the last year, as many of you know, I spent the last year mastering the swing, feeling very good, hitting the ball great, beautiful baby draw. So all those pieces are together, but the putting needs to improve. I mean, that needs to come down, you know, well below 36 putts a match. Around and hopefully much lower than that, and I have a solution for that. But you know, that's going to be spending all winter and come back strong next year and try to get them. But we got to the Elite Eight. That was a huge unexpected upside surprise this year. It was great to play under pressure. They were just better, and they could not be beat on that day. And so the learning experience, the takeaway was you know, huge progress on pretty much all parts of my game, huge opportunity for improvement into next year and pick up a lot of strokes on the putting. And I have a really interesting unconventional way. By the way, the scratch, he had like the biggest, ugliest putter you've ever seen. It was one of those stand-up things that you like hold at the top and you swing like a pendulum. And like he pulled this thing out and I'm like, oh my God, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. The guy missed 0 putts. And I guess the lesson is, which I know, it's don't worry about how you look, just get the results. And I think those of you who have been listening long enough, that's what I do in my primary career. And it works quite well. I just got to translate it over the golf course. I'm not going to get one that ugly, but I'm going to get one close to as ugly and take, like I have with my strokes, with my swing, using the stack and tilt method that I was taught by Gene. Taking all the variables I could out of my swing has really helped me gain consistency. If I can take a few variables out of my putting stroke, which I have a way that I think is going to be very successful in doing so, I think it's going to be a winning combination. So humbled by the loss, motivated by the opportunity, and best advice is don't lose. It sucks. But if you do lose, come back stronger and more aggressive, learn from the mistakes, and we'll come back and get them next year for sure. All right, Roblox. Okay, so here's okay, golf stories. Da da da. Hope you enjoyed North Carolina. You've expressed going through Atlanta this weekend to see the in-laws, and then back on Monday. So you've expressed views in recent months that natural gas players could see a comeback. I've had positions in Southwest and Chesapeake, both showed large growth in the free cash flow in recent quarters, high year-on-year return on capitals. Appreciate your thoughts. I know you keep pushing me back to Chesapeake and Southwest. We own Range from 410 basis. We think, the intrinsic value is well above 60. That's the one we like. We also own some Comstock. Southwest, you just their balance sheet's not quite as good. So if you can take a little more risk, then it should be okay. Chesapeake, I have no view on, but I know the ones I like, and I'm just sticking with them. And I've been in them for a long time, and they're up a lot. So that's that. David T. Hey Tom, somewhat new to your channel, have been following the CPS pick. Recently read Chris Mayer's 100 Baggers book. And one case study referenced a company, NVR, which reached 100 bagger status by buying back stock at good prices throughout the years. Do you think Cooper Standard has that ability if management team considered this? Thank you, David. I would say no. I'm sure a lot of people are surprised by that. I know what Cooper Standard is and I know what it's not. And this was modeled after the Tenneco trade. I think Cooper Standard has a real opportunity to make it back to new highs if management executes and we get the industry volumes. I believe in the former that management can execute. The key will be the industry volumes, which I also think if they get back to 85%, the stock could actually go back to new highs. As far as them then buying in stocks and being at a secular grower, the auto business is a cyclical business, and every major recession you're going to get a downturn, and they're highly levered to it. So we're in the beginning of the recovery, and that's when you want to own these type of stocks, and you want to own them the first 5 years. And then, when they reach fair value, you want to start to take some profits. But we're nowhere near that point. We're just getting started, and that's how we think about that. Ying. Oh, that's for investing. Okay. Dan. Okay, this one's interesting. Dan Hussein, thoughts on Hawaiian Electric Industries. According to the last report, less than 1% of their customers had homes destroyed by the fires. Power has been restored to over 80% of who had been out of power in Maui, and around 400 poles and 300 transformers were destroyed. They provide power to approximately 95% of the Hawaiian Islands. Is the price dislocation remotely justified? Okay, well, the last company that had that in a blue state, they crucified, which was PG&E in California. And we bought PG&E in 2020 on the washout, and it started to recover. It's probably about a double after 2 years. Actually, a little more than a double after 2 years. But what you see here with PG&E, they had the same problems. The government blamed them for causes of nature and made them pay for it and all that stuff. Is you don't know when the government's going to stop beating them up. And the question that you're asking is a good one, which is enough of that priced in? The company has said, thou dost protestest. They said they're not going to restructure. They'll work their way through it. I think it's probably worth a punt for a trade, but I wouldn't put any size. It could definitely go down to five or three before it recovers back to 20 over a few years. I just think there's going to be a lot of uncertainty because the government's going to keep blaming them for everything that's ever gone wrong in their lives and try to milk them for every penny that they have. And that's a long process because politicians' number one job is to get reelected, and the way they get reelected is by yelling at the people that their constituents are angry with. And if you live in Maui, you're angry that you haven't had power to watch Netflix for the last handful of days, and people died, and it's a big tragedy. So it's not going to get resolved in a minute. So you could get a dead cat bounce up to 20 in the next few whatever, and then it settles back out when the government says we're going to kill these guys. But I think a lot of pain is priced in. I would treat it more as a trade. I think your thinking is correct. It's been a durable business for some time. Let me see if I pulled up just to get an idea of the numbers of what this looks like on a normalized basis. Yeah, I mean, it just consistently grows flat, but it grows and pays a dividend. Basically trades up to where it needs to be for a 5% dividend yield. I think it's interesting. I wouldn't put any, like, if someone said you have to put this in the portfolio right now, I couldn't, because I couldn't mentally get there with a 6 to 10% position. But, you know, 2 or 3% position, I think it would be fine, is kind of how I think about it. So, not going to really say anything more about that, other than just don't underestimate the politician's ability to drag it out and leave that uncertainty overhang on the stock for a very long time. Maybe they'll be rational and it just recovers straight back up to 40, but I think you're going to be in for at least a few months of noise, and then there'll be an opportunity. If this thing continues to drift lower, I might get more interested in doing something with it, but the party just started, so to speak, and it's going to take some time to settle out. But good thinking. Jason. Odd Lots episode feat. Jason Korn reaches Zoe Liu, a China political economy expert. She delved into her thesis of 4Ds, demand, debt, demographics, decoupling, blah, blah, blah. Shed light from her book. She shed light from her book, Collaborated Research, that both the reported and unreported assets of the China sovereign wealth funds hold trillions of dollars that could be tapped for stimulus during an economic crisis. Yeah, all this is nice, but we know that already. So, you know, we know the demographics are going to cliff 5 years out. We think there's going to be a parabolic move up in the meantime. We know they have what they need to do the stimulus. The question is, what's the catalyst? Do we need 2 million kids rioting on the streets because they don't have jobs? And we know that it's coming to a head. So all of this stuff is valuable, but it's nothing particularly new. But thank you for sharing that. If anyone wants to listen to the Odd Lots, they should go ahead and do that. That guy's a nice guy. I met him at Lydia Moynihan's party for the New York Post. And I post a lot of his stuff on weekends. His podcasts are great. That one's for investing. All right. Who's this? Valerio. Oh, okay. Valerio Marco says, what do you think about selling put options if you have some capital available to cover them and you deploy for a business at a particular price? For example, if you'd increase your Alibaba position at 70 or the same Cooper Standard at 10, you may sell put contracts expiring in the next months and collect the premium if the price doesn't decline. And this way you could still make returns on the cash you have sitting, if not deployed, but short-term treasury. What do you think about using 30 to 50% margin? Do you consider this considerably risky? I wouldn't do it, because if you want to buy the stock, buy the stock. If it goes from 80 to 70, who cares? Just sit there, and if you have more money, buy more at 70. But buying the puts, what's the point? You're going to make a few bucks, and then it runs away from you, and you don't get the stock, and then you got to buy the stock up at 110 right before it pulls back. I've never understood the logic. And then number two, you got capital tied up anyway. You got to hold the cash to be, if you're forced to buy the stock. So for me, it's not for me. If you like the company, buy the stock. Stop being cute. Just get involved. Buy quality businesses. Hold them. When everyone wants them and they're trading above fair value, sell them. And rinse and repeat. Okay. Marco, I covered Jeff. All right. Jeff Claffey. Hi, Tom. Great channel. My friend just turned me on to Hedge Fund Tips. I have a question. Welcome, by the way. Have a question on Pod, P-O-D-D. I used to work there. 3 months ago, I left and sold my stock at 322. This week, they were as low as 225 with a double beat this week. See, you left and the stock is down a third. You know, what are you going to do? They should have thought twice and given you that raise. All right. This week, they were as low as 225 with a double beat. This past week, it went as low as 205. They dominate the insulin delivery space, though small, and are gaining more than 50% of the new starts. Bah, bah, bah. I wear the product personally. It's amazing. I think I'm going to buy back in, do a diabetes niche. Okay. I don't care about the short-term beat, but let's take a look at the stock. Yeah. Wow, this has been a runner. I don't love diabetes type of things because it reminds me of DaVita. And this is another issue with politicians is, you know, they cut the insulin costs because a lot of people, a lot of the constituents buy insulin. I mean, DaVita got smoked. They were like a dialysis? Anyway, insulin, yeah. I don't know if I want to play here because the last thing I need is Biden before the election saying we're going to bring down all diabetic costs. Because he's doing some math about how many voters have diabetes. So yeah, you had a bad year last year. Now it's starting to recover. I don't know. The stock, even if you believe this year's earnings, still trading at like 60, 70 times earnings. It's not a high quality business. For me, it's a pass. I mean, you're going to know it better than I do, so go for it. But I think a lot of the run is in the rearview mirror, if you ask me. I don't like to buy things that just went up 12x. For me, it's like law of large numbers. This could be unlimited, but it's just not for me. The other thing is if these diabetes drugs work as well as everyone's advertising for weight loss, it's going to be a lot less diabetics. I mean, people are going to lose weight and the type 2 diabetes is going to be dramatically less, assuming there are no side effects. But the other thing I'm thinking about is people have been taking a lot of these drugs for many, many years for diabetes and they're not dying. So maybe it will work. Maybe it will be a permanent solution for weight loss. We'll see. Okay, so Marat Asatrin says, watch your videos every week. As you give the best market insights, share it with everyone I know. I had three questions. Sorry. One, I understand the risk of leverage and don't want to use it anymore. However, I've used it and some of the positions I have used them in haven't gone great. But at the same time, there are other opportunities I want to tackle. So what should someone do in that situation? You should get off leverage, period. Number two, I asked this a couple weeks ago, but don't think you were able to see it. I'm not chasing Japan. You gave me all these Japanese stocks. I'm just not interested. I'll leave that to other people. I think that trade's going to unwind when emerging markets take off, and I don't want to chase anything in Japan right now, no matter how cheap it is, because the corporate governance has never been shareholder friendly. It's improving, but it's not improving at the pace. But I'll answer your third question, which is your thoughts on PHG. And one of the primary reasons I'm just not interested in Japan, no matter how cheap the stocks are, because they've always been cheap, is because the demographics. They have no babies and they have no immigration. That's not going to change. So you can juice it with monetary policy in the short term, but it's not going to change the nature of your future. And I want to be where the odds are in my favor, which is China for the next 3 to 5 years, which will be India after that for probably the next decade, which is right now the US with millennials. But I don't want to be in Japan. So they can keep going up without me. And I'm perfectly fine with errors of omission. I'm not comfortable with errors of commission. So PHG is Philips. That's an electronics company. This is a dog like Sony was for many, many years. This is probably a value trap. If I pull it up, I'm going to guess they do not compound capital very well. Here it is. Revenues, sales per share have been flat for, or declining for almost 20 years. Cash flow has been unpredictable. Sales have been declining to flat. They've compounded capital at low single digits when they're lucky. This is a poorly managed, low quality business. I don't care how cheap it is, I'm not interested. But you'll learn how we think about these things over time. You probably go back and listen to a dozen or so episodes while you're doing your exercise or walking or whatever you do. It doesn't mean it's not going to work its way back to 40. It just means there are better quality businesses that we could buy at cheaper prices that have more certainty to generate a higher IRR. And this is not one of them. So we would take a pass. Thank you for joining. Thank you for sharing it with your friends. Hope that was helpful. All right. Luca, huge fan of your weekly podcast. Thanks for all the value you're providing us. I wanted to ask you if you, Luca Milosevljevic. Okay. Wanted to ask if you could take a look at Douglas Elliman, since I believe at this price has a huge margin of safety. Thanks in advance. I'll share your video cast with all my friends that are value investors. Greetings from Austria. Luca, thanks so much for sharing. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, please click like and subscribe. What that does is it triggers the algorithm to show it to more people. And the more people that watch, the more incentivized we are to keep doing it for you free of charge. And we're happy to do that, but play your part. If you're getting value, please share it with one or two of your friends. Ask them to do the same and hit like and subscribe and leave comments. That also triggers the algorithm to show it to more people when they log into YouTube. And that's a good thing for everyone. So Douglas Elliman, this is a new company, new public company, residential brokerage in New York City. The rents in New York City on the residential side are now hitting record highs. I'm sure you guys have seen the headlines. This business should bounce back. The question is, let's see if I don't like that business in general. Not sure why it never works out. There was a huge one that Apollo took over during the great financial crisis, and that thing was just a headache for them. I think it was the one that owned like Century 21, but the public company was called something else. EBITDA is negative this year. Net income is negative. Cash flow from operations negative. Free cash flow negative. So why do you think this is cheap? They're losing money. Yeah, this is not for us. Number one, there's not enough history that we have to rely on. If you think it's cheap relative to the price that some sell side investment banker forced it on the public, I mean, maybe. What is this trading at in terms of, like, since it's losing money? Let's see. It's trading at, where's Douglas Elliman? It's trading at $2, $14. Yeah, so I think, let's see what the balance sheet looks like. 130 million of cash, no debt. All right. Yeah, I mean, this is like, I see what you're saying. This is probably a trade. this is not something that we would put a long-term position in, but you know, it seems like they probably got all the sellers out. Maybe you get a bounce up to $8. But for me, that's kind of gambling. You probably win, but if you do it enough times, you'll wind up getting smoked. I don't know. These businesses have never worked well as public companies if you're thinking about owning it for a long term. But I guess here, they don't have much debt. They have a little cash. They're going to be in business for a little while. I mean, Douglas Elliman's been around for a long time. I'm just trying to think, what is this thing? Fine. Can't believe they got it. Must have been a SPAC. That makes sense. Like, how did they get this thing out at $11? But it was probably a SPAC. So it's got a $214 million market cap. Back out the cash, it's $100 million. Total revenues, gross profit. Yeah, so I mean the revenues are misleading because they pay it all out as commission. Let's just see here. Yeah. I think it could work as a trade. I understand why you're thinking the way you're thinking. It's probably not. Yeah, I think it's okay as a trade. Kaokan Unosawa. Been following your podcast for the past year since we found another idea I'm exploring currently and wanted to get your thoughts. Company's Burford Capital, and they're a litigation finance company that has historically been able to compound capital at just under 30% annually by funding legal expenses for commercial lawsuits. Their income is lumpy based on settlements or trial results, but the nice part is they're uncorrelated with the overall economy and business cycle. They seem to be trading around book value at this point, much higher pre-COVID, and we focus on reinvesting the profits to compound the value with the business. Yeah, you know, I know people that are in this game, and I've never liked it because it works until it doesn't. This reminds me of Viaticals in 2007, all the quote unquote smart private equity and hedge fund guys were buying all these life insurance policies and they got absolutely smoked. Let me just see if I can, I think I did pull this up, BUR. Burford Capital. Yeah, so it's just it's an unpredictable business. I mean, they were doing 23 million 3 years ago. They're down to doing 8 million. And they're making a lot of money. It's lumpy. I don't like this. This shouldn't be a public company. Someone should just own this privately and do it. Cash from operations is just consistently negative. Financing debt issued. Free cash flow negative every single year. No, not for me. If you want to get into this game, just try to do it privately. For me, I've been offered this a million times. I've always passed. So I'll just leave it at that. John, oh, that's for investing. Sanjay. Okay. And that's it. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Let me just make sure there's not something we missed. Southwest, Roblox, Hawaiian Electric. Wow, we did a lot of companies today. Nike, Philips. Okay, we got them all. We'll be back next week from Connecticut. Not same time, not same place, but definitely same time. Thank you for tuning in. In the meantime, make it a great one. Bye for now.